Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go! Let's go! Let's go!
The barbell hasn't changed in over 100 years. I can take a 25-pound plate, and we'll go out on the turf, and I'll have you hating life. We talk about straining your gut, pushing past that comfort level. I want a lot of energy.
What better breeding ground is there for being a success in life than the weight room?
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKeefrey, and this is episode number 260. You believe that?
260.
60 episodes. Truly appreciate you guys watching each and every week. Appreciate those of you that like, share, comment. Just helps me continue to highlight the great people we have in our profession. Doing a live one today. I'm real excited to have a friend of mine on, Nico Apostolopoulos. I always screw up his name, Apostolopoulos.
Hey, he's got it right.
That's
a quiz at the end of the podcast.
Apostolopoulos. Yeah. Nico's and I, we met back in 2010.
2010.
Yeah, 2010 at the UKSEA, and just a guy that we've been at conferences together, a guy I respect, and is doing some fantastic things in the recovery regeneration space, and so... This has been a long time coming, getting you on the show.
Oh, thank you, Ron. I know it's my fault. Ron's been trying to get me on the show for a long time, but it hasn't happened. So today we're in Toronto at Vaughan at the Hill Academy.
That's right.
Run by Dan Noble, who is a really good friend of mine and a very respected person in the strength and conditioning world. Works with a lot of athletes, and he's brought me on board to work with a lot of his athletes from a recovery regeneration point of view.
Yeah, no, Dan's been on the show. For those of you that have seen that, if not, look up Dan Noble, and it's a great episode as well. But, man, you've done it all. I mean, NBA, NHL, worked in track and field, rugby, soccer, lectured around the world. Which stop along the way best defines you as the person that you are today?
Which stop?
Yeah.
Elaborate more.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, I mean, for me, South Florida was where I really kind of grew up as a coach.
Oh, okay.
That's where I feel like I became who I am today. Which stop along the way kind of defines you?
Working with the Vancouver Canucks and the Vancouver Grizzlies in Vancouver, obviously. That's where I had my clinic, and that's where I developed the whole technique known as microstretching. And it started there, working with high-level athletes. I had the opportunity to work with high-level athletes given to me with the organizations there. A guy by the name of Troy Wenzel,
yeah.
Peter Twist.
Yeah.
Peter and I go way back. In fact, it was Peter and I who brought the idea of using bicycles after post activities with regards to, and now you're seeing it more and more.
Sure.
But I approached Peter a long time ago and I said, hey, Pete, why don't we just continue the aerobic flush, trying to remove as much lactic acid as possible out of the athletes to prime them for recovery regeneration. So Pete Twist has been a big thing. Dr. Jack Taunton, who's a very, very important person in the NBA, he's now emeritus. These are my stops.
Yeah.
You know, and developing the clinic out of Vancouver.
Yeah. Well, you don't, you know, I want to dig into microstretching,
yes,
of course, but you don't work with guys like Ray Allen and Vancouver and teams over in Europe without making some mistakes along the way.
Oh.
What's one of the biggest mistakes you've made and how you learn from it?
Having my long last name.
Apostolopoulos.
Now he's got it. Perfect. My biggest mistakes, that's a really good question, Ron. That's a really good question. I don't make many mistakes, no. I think initially I should have gone and gotten my PhD.
Yeah.
I've just recently gotten my PhD. So if I had gotten my PhD further back, like 20 some odd years ago, that would have given this movement more credibility. And this is probably, and I was told a long time ago, you got to get your credibility, you got your PhD, because I reached the pinnacle.
Right.
Even though I was working with Ray Allen and Scott Williams and Sam Cassell and a lot of people, like working with St. Helens Rugby League and Wolverhampton Wanderers,
right,
my PhD is the one thing that eluded all this stuff, and I needed to do the research.
Yeah, sure.
And that was probably, I should have done it earlier. But, I mean, by the grace of God, and I believe in a God that, I've done it, and things are unfolding in the way that they're meant to unfold.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, we both share the desire, the shared importance on recovery and regeneration. I mean, as much as I'm a strength coach and I'm a pushing guys, you know, I always say that, you know, you have them for 2 hours a day, but they got 22 hours to mess up everything you just did. You know, and unless you're involved with that somehow, some way, you know, you're fighting a losing battle every single day.
Definitely.
Know? And so, you know, we've talked quite a bit about, you know, micro stretching and how to incorporate it into the program. But for those that are unfamiliar with micro stretching or unfamiliar with your work, what in a nutshell, what is micro stretching? And then we'll get into aerobic flush and all those types of things.
Well, micro stretching in a nutshell, Ron, is using very gentle stretching. Now, let's define gentle stretching. When I work with a lot of my athletes, I actually stretch them around a 3 or 4 out of 10, and I teach them to stretch around a 3 or 4 out of 10. So what does that mean? From a scale of 0 to 10, 0 being no pain, no sensation, to 10, which is extreme pain and discomfort, I teach my athletes, I want you to be around a 3 or 4 out of 10. Mm-hmm. Now, I brought that idea out 20 some odd years ago, and it was, a lot of people were sort of, balking at the idea of, well, if I don't feel the stretch, is it going to benefit me?
Right.
And my whole idea has been that if the stretch is gentle, we're not going to cause inflammation. So microstretching is looking at using gentle stretching to diminish an inflammatory response,
right,
which is the key. Anytime an athlete trains, they're causing inflammation. Anytime they eat, they're causing an inflammatory response. So what we need to do is we need to provide them with the tools to diminish inflammation and help them recover. Correct. If you're taking an athlete and they are stretching aggressively, or you're stretching them aggressively, you're only perpetuating the inflammatory response.
Right.
So when we look at athletes that are chronically injured, they have an inflammation in their system. It makes no sense then to take that same athlete and stretch them aggressively, to rehab them aggressively.
Right.
Because now I know there's going to be a lot of people out there going to say, hey, Nick, hold on, back off. Because isn't inflammation supposed to be a good thing?
Right.
Now, there's two schools of thought, Ron. One school of thought, which is, yeah, we need to create inflammation, because once we cause inflammation, we remove all the, so the inflammation causes, we're going to remove all the dead cells, and they're going to lay down new cells,
right,
and we're going to lay down new tissue, and voila, the
right
athlete recovers. From an acute point of view, that's what happens.
Sure.
But from a chronic point of view, that's not what happens.
Yeah, after a 2.5 hour practice.
Say a 2.5 hour practice, and you've got some athletes that are injured,
right,
that have to basically recover. Well, when you have already inflammation in the system,
right,
when you're causing a recovery mode that's going to cause more inflammation, and by that meaning that you're taking the athletes to pain and discomfort,
sure,
you're increasing the pro-inflammatory cytokines. These are terms that you need to learn. Pro-inflammatory cytokines are blood biomarkers.
Right.
Now, you said, what was my biggest mistake? Well, if I had gone and done my PhD a long time ago, stuff like pro-inflammatory cytokines would have been part of the stretching lexicon,
yep,
years ago.
Yeah, sure.
And the recovery regeneration lexicon. Now we're starting to bring those words into it. Now, what pro-inflammatory cytokines are in a nutshell is, anytime you cause any disturbance, your body causes an injury, your body actually has to heal that injury. So it relates, it sends out what are known as signals.
Right.
Okay, and these signals, if the injured site is my knee, it sends out signals, and your body brings in what we call neutrophils. So these are pro-inflammatory cells.
Right.
Okay, now when the cell goes into the specific part of the body, like let's say the knee that's been injured, then it releases what are known as pro-inflammatory cytokines. And these actually are saying, hey guys, we've got an issue here. So these are your Pac-Men. They
right
come in there to remove all the dead cells,
right,
all the dead tissues. Now, the key that you have to keep in mind, guys, out there is when you're having a chronic injury, those pro-inflammatory cytokines are in the tissue already. So when you're causing more issues, like through taking the tissue to pain, the cytokines can re-release themselves. It's called an autocrine response. So now you're adding more of those pro-inflammatory proteins in an area that's already inflamed,
right,
and you're going to keep that athlete chronically chronically injured, and they will never recover. Yeah, they may recover a bit, but they will be predisposed to inflammation and further injuries.
So I think there's two ways we can go with this. One is the injured athlete, right? Yeah. And how does microstretching benefit the injured athlete,
mm-hmm.
which is what we're talking about right now.
Right.
And then there's the just in general, just, you know, getting better rest and recovery, you know.
Perfect.
So let's stay with the injured athlete for a moment before we jump into the other. So if you do have that athlete, how do you incorporate microstretching into their regimen of, you know, training, you know, tactical training, performance training, rehab and recovery, rehab and athletic training? Where does it fit?
You send them up to Toronto so I can work on that.
Yeah, it makes it easier, right?
Makes it easier. Well, the thing is, as a strength and conditioning coach and as a rehab specialist, you have to show them stretches that they need to do. So you've got, let's say you've got an athlete that has a right hamstring injury, okay? The key, guys, which is very, very important, is you just don't focus on the right hamstring.
Right.
You've got to look at how the other muscles around the hamstring are supporting that injured site.
Sure.
Okay, so now you need to show them stretches that are going to target the IT band, that are going to target the calves, that are going to target the hip flexors.
Mm-hmm.
I've often said, I don't care about the injured hamstring muscle. I care about how that injured hamstring muscle is affecting, let's say, the right leg and then the left leg.
Sure.
Compensatory shifts,
yep.
Okay?
Yep.
So the other thing that you've got to teach these injured athletes is to stretch properly. Now, what do I mean by that? You've got to place the body in a position where you are eliminating as much muscle contraction as possible. Okay? When there's an injured muscle, the muscle itself is compensated, the body's compensating for that muscle that's protected, but the rest of the body is on for
yeah,
protection.
Sure.
So you need to relax that body by showing stretches that are supportive stretches. Now, for instance, a lot of us, when we're looking at stretching our calf muscle, most of us will go up against the wall and put our foot up on the wall and then move our bodies forward to stretch a calf muscle, right?
Right. Yep.
Okay, that's a wrong stretch. Why? Because my calf muscle is contracting at the same time as I'm trying to stretch it.
Right.
So that defeats the purpose. So what you want to do is you want to introduce stretches that basically you're supporting as much of the body as possible.
Right.
And then you can target the muscles to help them stretch properly. So you're not, the muscle is not contracting while it's being stretched. Very, very important.
Sure.
So when you've got injured athletes, it's very important that you show them stretches that are supported and are very gentle stretches. That way, but the biggest problem you're going to have to deal with these athletes is the mentality of, I'm not feeling the stretch.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly where I was going to go next. You know, when you're dealing with athletes, and typically, I mean, just coaches in general, or more is better,
right?
Or attack right now. How do you address the psychology of that? How do you address the athlete that's sitting on the table saying, all right, this is a three, I don't feel a three, but you say it's working. So how am I gauging improvement? How am I gauging, and how are you handling the psychology of managing that athlete's expectations?
Well, first and foremost, we're dealing with the culture of no pain, no gain.
Right.
I've often said the greatest gain is made without any pain, especially from a recovery regeneration point of view. And how are you dealing with the psychology? Well, first and foremost, you can tell the athlete that's chronically injured, the reason why you're still in this state is because you still have that inflammation in your body.
Right.
So what we need to do is we need to show you a different paradigm, a different shift in thought that basically tries to relax you. Because in order for the athlete to recover properly, you have to relax the nervous system as well.
Right.
So when the athlete is feeling that relaxation, that's when you're basically able to diminish that inflammation in the system itself.
Mm-hmm.
again, it's going to be a struggle, guys. It's going to be a struggle in sports because the no pain, no gain idea.
Right.
But you have to sort of get them to believe that by relaxing, it's going to be more beneficial in the long run.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, I think this gets into a little bit of, you know, those other 22 hours that we're talking about, you
exactly.
know, and where stretching really fits,
exactly.
you know, into the end of the process. And, you know, most people, conventional wisdom is let's stretch right after practice. Let's get a, you know, let's get a good stretch in before we go to the locker room, whatever. And that's going to start the recovery process. But you know, through your research, I mean, you don't feel that that's the case.
No.
You know?
Sorry.
Let's walk through just because we were talking off camera and this helped me understand it.
Yeah.
Let's walk through what a typical day should look like. I mean, everything from the dynamic warm up, you know, going in to the aerobic flush
yeah.
to, you know, on down the line.
So what Ron's alluding to, guys, is off camera, we probably had the best conversation and we didn't mic
it. We're trying to recap it as much as
we can. We're trying to recap it. But what Don's alluding to is let's look at stretching. Now, I want to sort of say to a lot of the listeners out there is I'm not looking at stretching from increasing range of motion. My whole shift is looking stretching as a tool of recovery regeneration, which is very, very important, along with nutrition.
It's an important distinction, yeah.
You know, and that's something that you guys have got to keep in mind. So 25, 30 years ago, when Ron and I started off in this career of strength and conditioning, and I was an elite athlete myself, we were taught to do static stretching before an activity. Well, now we're starting to do more dynamic. And that sort of started with myself about 20, 25 years ago where I've said, okay, guys, we've warmed up the body. And unfortunately, you still see it. So we've warmed up the body. We've got it ready for us to do the movement. And then we introduce static stretching. It's counterproductive. So you've stimulated the nervous system. You've got it ready for activity. And now you're going to relax it. You will never see a Usain Bolt or any sprinter. Before they get into the blocks, they're jumping, they're doing high knee raises, they're getting excited, they're getting their whole nervous system excited to get into the blocks and explode. The last thing you want to do is do static stretching. So you do dynamic stuff. And that's the key. Do dynamic flexibility. And now the other thing you got to keep in mind is do dynamic flexibility that's not complex in moves. The simpler, the better.
Right.
Okay, very important. And Dan Noble does a lot of stuff like that with using dynamic flexibility, simple stuff. So check out Dan Noble's podcast. I don't know if he's done that, talked
yeah.
on that, but you're going to have to do another podcast.
Yeah, we have to come back with that one.
We'll have to come back with that one. Now, the key is after your athlete has finished. Now, we're not talking about the injured athlete because Ron said early on, we've got the injured athlete. Now let's look at the non-injured athlete, the athlete that's plugged in two and a half hours of training. The one thing that's very, very important is you don't introduce static stretching right after an activity, mainly because the nervous system is fatigued and the muscles are fatigued and you have lactic acid in the body.
And energy depletion.
Energy depletion, Ron. So there is a system that I, a long time ago that I developed, which basically looks at about four or five stages. The very first important thing post-activity is what I call an aerobic flush, which basically means you want to use your aerobic system to basically diminish or remove as much lactic acid as possible. Okay? Very, very important. So that's the first stage, like a light run, like what Peter Twist and I did a long time ago with bicycles. Just relaxation. Don't put any more stress on the muscles and remove as much lactic acid as possible. The body removes lactic acid within an hour anyways, but let's speed up the process. The next most important thing is to introduce, because glucose and glycogen have been depleted in the muscle and in the neural system, you want to introduce the nutrition aspect of it, which, you know, it takes about an hour and a half. That's the window of opportunity. But the other thing after that is you introduce contrast baths, hot and cold showers, because you want to keep pumping that action, removing as much, using your circulatory system in a pumping type fashion to remove as much lactic acid as possible and other metabolites. The time you use static stretching, and this is something that's going to basically create a lot of concern out there, is at least 2 hours post-activity. What? What are you talking about, Nick? The body, as soon as you finish training, the neural system is fatigued, you stand a chance of overstretching and causing injuries. Okay, very, very important. The true state of a muscle is its cold state. That'll tell you how far you can actually stretch. And you don't want to go to the point of pain. Like I said earlier on, we don't want to cause inflammation in the body. So 2 hours post-activity, you are assured that the body has cooled down a lot. Okay? Now here's something that I'm going to digress a bit. When we're looking at the nervous system is divided into two systems. The sympathetic and the parasympathetic. It's very, very important that you guys realize where I'm going with this. Anytime you cause pain, that's a sympathetic nervous system response. And what does that mean? The body wants to remove itself from the stimulus of pain. Fight, flight, or fright. It's the great teacher. You put your hand on a hot element, you're going to remove it. And you're never going to do it again. Okay? The great healer of the body is the parasympathetic nervous system. It's the opposite. And that's the system that you need to stimulate in order to recover and regenerate properly. Okay? Now, the one thing that's very, very important, and Ron and I talked about this prior to this, was when to do static stretching and when will it have its biggest effect. Ready, guys? Before you go to sleep.
Yeah, I agree with that. Well, that's something that, you know, we talked about it off camera, that I do stretch before I go to bed, which makes me feel better.
Yeah.
But you talked a little bit about, you know, that whole process. It's not just stretching. It's eliminating the blue light. It's turning your system off.
This guy hit the nail on the head. If you guys want proper recovery regeneration, eliminate the blue light. Eliminate your iPads. Eliminate your iPods. Eliminate your cell phone before you go to bed, because it's a stimulus, guys. It's hitting you all the time.
We talked about the brain
and
waves. You know, and alpha and beta and theta and delta being the most important, you know, and that being within those first two sleep cycles.
Exactly. So you got to realize your brain has about 5 waves to it. Gamma is the hypersensitive. It's the highest. You're always on. You're hypersensitive. And the next wave after that is beta. Ron and I are talking right now. We're talking to you guys. You're conscious with us. That's the beta brainwave. As soon as you close your eyes, that stimulates the alpha brainwave. And this is the brainwave that a lot of people try to do through meditation and relaxation techniques, okay? Which is very, very important. And then it's theta delta. Delta is the deepest of the brainwaves. And here's the kicker, guys. It's only stimulated within the first 2 cycles of sleep. The first 90 minutes is when you're going to hit delta. Why is delta very important? Because that's when you release the restorative enzymes to help you properly recover and regenerate. And that's the key. Microstretching, low intensity stretching, is about getting the body ready, not only to help it from an inflammatory or diminished inflammatory response, but getting the body ready to stimulate the delta waves, the brain waves. That is the key to proper recovery and restoration of an athlete. And these athletes have to realize, Ron's been a coach for years. I've been a recovery regeneration specialist for years. We're not going to go out there playing the game for you. You guys are responsible for your recovery regeneration. You guys are responsible for getting yourselves ready for activity the next day. Get rid of that blue light, because that's what's killing it. And it's interestingly enough, Ron, one of the biggest issues you see with athletes is sleep deprivation.
No doubt. Yeah, absolutely.
Sleep deprivation is one of the biggest things, because they're not getting that deep sleep that they need. You can sleep 9-10 hours, but if you haven't hit those two first cycles, those two delta wave, the delta wave within those first 2 cycles, you can sleep for 20 hours.
Yep.
You're never going to recover and regenerate properly. And that's the key.
Yeah. Well, it's a fight not just to get them to bed in the first place, but then they're usually on their phone or doing whatever and disrupting those sleep cycles and the whole. I agree with you 100%. Let's talk a little bit. I mean, you're coming at it from a recovery regeneration standpoint. Let's talk about actually trying to improve flexibility. You know, is there a difference? I mean, when you're trying to stretch for improved flexibility versus trying to stretch for rest and recovery and other different tactics?
That's a good question, and the answer is no. Now why are you going to say no, Nick? I'll tell you why. I worked with a lot of Muay Thai kickboxers. I've worked out with a lot of martial artists. And here's the interesting thing. They have amazing flexibility. As long, here's the kicker, guys, as long as they continue stretching at that intensity.
Right.
When these athletes stop, and I'm glad you brought this up, when these athletes stop stretching aggressively, or they have had an injury, they lose a lot of that flexibility. And it's amazing to see this. The only reason why, and here, guys, this is where, let me tell you something a bit about my research. My research for my PhD, and I'm actually now, I've just finished writing a book for Springer, the big biomedical publishing company, and the book is called Stretch Intensity and the Inflammatory Response. I specifically did my PhD to look at stretching intensity and does aggressive stretching cause inflammation? And my studies were the first studies internationally to look at human subjects, aggressive and low intensity stretching, and blood biomarkers, those pro-inflammatory cytokines that we talked about, and another thing called C-reactive protein. Now, C-reactive protein is actually the protein that's released by the liver, and it's a global response to inflammation, okay? And what we found is that when these participants stretched at an 7 or 8 out of 10, we released pro-inflammatory cytokines, and we caused inflammation in these athletes. Hmm. Now, Ron's question was, is there a difference with regards to using aggressive stretching and gentle stretching with increasing ranges of motion? And I reiterated, yes, there is. Because when you're gentle with the stretching, you're not gonna cause scar tissue. And that's what happens when you stretch aggressively. You are causing scar tissue. Now, you gotta realize, it's the myotendin junction where the muscles and tendon meet that 90% of all injuries happen. And that's where you're going to develop a lot of scar tissue. So a lot of these athletes that have developed ranges of motion through aggressive stretching, and keep this in thought because you guys are going to ask me about gymnastics. We'll talk about that one too. When they have developed that range of motion, they've developed it through the development of scar tissue. When they stop or they're injured, they lose that range of motion because the scar tissue starts compressing. And that's not the range of motion that you want to develop. Right. You want to develop range of motion which you are going to keep.
Sure.
Again, using gentle stretching. There was a study done, not me, so that way I wasn't biased, that looked at using gentle stretching. It was a study done with ballet dancers. And what they found when they used micro stretching, which is gentle stretching, the people increased both their active and passive ranges of motion as opposed to using the old ballet stretches, which was aggressive.
Yeah.
Now, why did I bring in gymnastics? There's gonna be a lot of gymnastics coaches out there that are gonna hate what I'm about to say. A lot of these young athletes develop these ranges of motion from a young age because their joints are being altered. Listen, this is a very important thing. When you're working with young athletes, you need to basically look at anatomy. The key is a lot of the joints prior to the age, for instance, the hip joint prior to the age of 16 is still cartilage.
Right.
So when you've got a four-year-old kid, so now when you look at the acetabulum, which is the cup in your hip joint, you've got three bones there. You've got the pubic, the ischium, and the iliac, okay? They actually form a Y in the acetabulum, and that Y is cartilage. As the athlete progresses and reaches the age of 16, that's when it basically ossifies, okay? When you've got a young athlete, you've got that young athlete in the leapfrog position, and you're putting pressure, and I've seen a lot of these young kids cry to the point of pain.
Oh, you got that coach out in Denver that was cranking down on him.
Oh, it's crazy.
I guess it was cheerleading, not gymnastics, but same thing.
Yeah, but it's crazy.
Yeah.
Because the femoral head, guys, is bone. The acetabulum is still pliant.
Right.
You're actually forcing the spreading of that joint, and you're going to create a hypermobile athlete.
Yeah.
I'd rather work with a tight athlete any day.
Yeah.
A hypermobile athlete, they're too far gone for me.
Yeah.
Okay. And this is what you're seeing in gymnastics or any form of using aggressive stretching at a young age. The bones still haven't ossified. Very, very important to keep that in mind when you're working with young athletes.
Yeah, I think the big thing that with our talks,
yeah,
you know, it goes back to that stretch intensity, you know, mm-hmm. and really understanding what that is, and that, and teaching your athletes to understand what that is. And it's one thing where you think that it's nothing, but it could be. I mean, for some of those tight athletes, so you know, it could be, you know, level 10 pain for them.
It could be.
And especially if they're injured.
And then you're looking at compensatory shifts, and how are you going to deal with what the right hamstring has done to the rest of the body? It's a full package, guys.
Right.
It's a very full package. And now people are going to say, what is 3 or 4 out of 10 defined as? Okay. The most difficult thing that we see when we're working with stretching is specifically, you're looking at the parameters. Stretching is no different from training. You've got the parameter of intensity. You've got the parameter of duration and frequency. The biggest problem we have with stretching is an intensity is it's a qualitative response. It's a personal perception. Okay, my 3 or 4 out of 10 could be 6 out of 10 for Ron.
All right.
Okay, so the one of the best metaphors that you can use with your athletes is the metaphor of it's like putting your hand in lukewarm water, that nice, gentle feeling.
Right.
That's what a stretch needs to feel like. Again, remember, we go back to the nervous system. Sympathetic. Parasympathetic. We want to stimulate the parasympathetic. We want to stimulate the system that's going to help heal. Because as I said earlier on, the parasympathetic nervous system is the great healer. The sympathetic nervous system is the great teacher.
Right.
And that's what an athlete like Ron and Dan Noble and all these people they use. They're stimulating you guys. In order to recover and regenerate, we need to distimulate you. We need to work the opposite, which is very, very important. And we need to basically remove as much inflammation as possible in the body.
Yeah.
That's the key. So 3 or 4 out of 10 is a gentle, warm, lukewarm feeling. Anything more than that. Now, there's been a lot of research. And interestingly enough, ever since I've started my work about microstretching has been around since 1995 as a technique. But the concept has been around since 1986. Interestingly enough, we're starting to see more and more research looking at stretching intensity. I've just been asked recently to review a paper for a journal, the Journal of Sports Rehabilitation, and the paper that came to my attention had to deal with stretching intensity,
right,
comparing high and low stretching intensity. This is where the field is moving right now. And this is what we have to look at. Intensity is now becoming a very hot topic in not only in stretching intensity, not only in sports, but also in rehab, which is very, very important.
Well, I think that's the point. And hopefully that's what we're taking away from this episode is that, I mean, we talked for close to an hour before we even hit record. We've gone 35 minutes here already. We're just scratching the surface here. And so
the tip of the iceberg.
I would encourage you guys, you know, he's coming out with his book soon. To pick that up and to check that out as well, or reach out to Nick. You know, he's super helpful to me through the years. Very open, very, you know, willing to share and those types of things. But man, we end the show with some resources. Give us the best piece of coaching advice you ever received.
The greatest gain is made without no pain.
Greatest gain is made without no pain. I love it.
That's it.
What about a book?
Thank you, Ron.
App and website recommendation.
I'm not a big app person, so sorry, guys. As for a book, Ron and I were talking prior to the podcast. There's a book called Silence in the Age of Noise. People, we need to take that downtime for ourselves. We need to basically try to go to silence. It's very interesting, the topic of silence. There was a study that was done where they had people in a room, I can't remember which university it was, and they had these people stay in a room for 15 minutes and do nothing, okay? Now, the one thing that they had also, and here's the kicker, they had this buzzer that would release a shock to your body.
If you talk?
If you couldn't handle.
Really?
If you couldn't handle the silence within yourself. So basically I'm sitting here and I'm going to try to sit here for 15 minutes and not say anything and try to calm myself down. It creates almost like an anxiety attack inside of us because we're so used to, you know what's interesting, Ron? Here's some interesting facts, guys. I don't know how they came up with the idea that a goldfish has the attention span of 9 seconds. Well, I don't know how they came out with this, but here's a kicker, guys. Back in about 2000, I think it was, the attention span of an average human was 12 seconds.
Wow.
Okay? Right now, it's less than 8 seconds. We've got less of an attention span than a goldfish because we're always bombarded with stimuli.
That's interesting.
Okay? Now, continuing on with the study, so if a person couldn't handle being by themselves,
right,
they were more likely to touch that button to create that stimulus of pain
just to add something.
In order to deal with the silence.
That's funny.
One guy hit it 190 times.
Oh my God, that'd be me probably.
It's crazy. So what's the take home message? We need to basically go within ourselves again. I'm not going to try to sound like a guru or like a meditation person, but people, we need to find that time for ourselves. And it's so interesting that when you're looking at my cell phone, most of the time it spends in airplane mode. And I'll tell you right now, and I don't have data. It's just a phone for me. But I think there was a study, Ron, that showed that anytime there's a little bleep, there's a serotonin release.
Yep.
And automatically a person jumps to it.
Yep.
You know? Guys, we've been conditioned not to be able to find that silence within ourselves. You need to find that. It's very, very important for your mental state. And here's another thing. I'm a Christian. And the one thing that is very important is finding spaces where you can find that silence.
Right.
And one of the most important, and you don't have to be a Christian, any person that, even if you go into a Muslim temple or a Jewish synagogue, these spaces have a neat feeling behind them.
Yeah, I agree.
Of you're finding in that calmness. When I lived in England for 5 years, when I did my PhD, I used to go to all the cathedrals. And as soon as I walked through those cathedrals, it was like,
whew. Yeah. You gotta have to be. You can't be walking around all geeked out.
We need that silence. Now, the website that I frequent a lot is the IAAF, which is the International Association of Athletic Federations. Because for me, I think that track and field, and that's my biggest love, and I've worked with a lot of coaches in the past, like Andy Higgins, who was a track and field coach at University of Toronto, one of the top decathlete coaches, and I've worked with the UK Athletics in the UK, English Institute of Sport as well, is to see what they can do with the human body on the track is amazing.
Yeah.
Is amazing. And I'm not taking it away from football. Football is just as amazing. But just to see I think it's a pure sport, and I frequent the IAAF just to see how the athletes are progressing. And plus, I'm also involved with the IAAF itself as a contributing editor to the New Studies of Athletics.
Oh, that's great. Know? Well, man, you know, we've talked through the years. You know, what I love, and that's why I talk about this a lot on the podcast, is what I love is originators, people that have original thought, that aren't afraid to put themselves out there, share concepts, and that's where microstretching is. I mean, I think that's something, not everybody agrees with it, right?
Oh, no.
You know, but that's okay. And you're willing to have conversations and talk about it and come, explain from where you're coming from and the research that you've done. And to me, that's what this field's all about. That's what we need more of, is people challenging ideals and norms.
I agree.
And so I've always respected that about you, but I've also respected the fact that you're, first thing we did, talk about each other's families when we walked in, family man of Christ, I think that's awesome, man. So appreciate you coming on the show, brother.
Thanks, brother.
Thanks so much.
And if you need to get a hold of me, I can give you my website.
Yep, we'll link it all up for sure.
We'll link it all up. I'll give you my email, microstretching@gmail.com. Or you can link up through Ron, and if there's any people who want me to come out and speak, I'm available for anything. And you want to challenge me, go right ahead, because that's how we grow, guys.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefrey.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefrey, on Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefrey. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.